Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so happy you all are here. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday. I know that I've been really intentional about just being and doing fun things. I'm making yogurt and I'm going to try making sourdough bread next. And I've been baking and it's just been so much fun because it's been all these little things that I've been putting off for so long. So I'm really trying to take advantage of the downtime. All right, before we start our cameo for tonight, let's begin with an opening meditation. So I invite you to just pause if you are able and close your eyes. And bringing your attention deep within your being. There is so much on the surface of our minds and out in the world that can hook us and trip us up. So many things that seem to be coming at us from so many different directions, so many things that it seems we have to defend against. And at some point, we can only do so much. And it's as if we are pushed into remembering that all we have to do is trust. All we can do is come back to trust. Trust in the Holy Spirit, in Jesus, in God, whoever it is you are comfortable calling upon. And so just bringing your mind into this space, bringing your recognition into this space that ultimately this is the answer. It's trusting. It's trusting that even if we feel a lack of peace, even if the body is showing signs of separation, be it through sickness or pain or anything, we can remember that there's something deeper that we can remember beneath all appearances. No matter what it is that seemingly shows up on our doorstep, the plan for our healing is certain. It's guaranteed. And we're going to be reading about that tonight. So taking a nice, mindful breath in and out. In this holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. With that love in your heart and light in your mind, again, taking a nice deep breath in and out, and returning our attention to right here, right now. This time and place, this seeming time and place. Okay. So cameo 13, God created time. It's on page 1760 of the CE. It's actually a bit shorter of a cameo. So you know what? Rather than say some opening words, let's just dive in. God created time. Since the earlier versions of the Course came to light, students have puzzled about the view in the early dictation that the world was created by God. How, they wonder, does this fit with what the rest of the Course teaches, that God did not create the physical world? Here, for example, is the kind of teaching that is typical of the later course. And the quote is, "The world you see is an illusion of a world. God did not create it, for what he creates must be eternal as himself. Yet there is nothing in the world you see that will endure forever."
What are you reading from? What Cameo?
We're Cameo 13.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No problem. We're at the very end, actually beginning with, I guess, this third paragraph, although that third paragraph is like three sentences. The logic in this passage is clear. God creates only the eternal. Nothing in this world is eternal. Therefore, God did not create this world. Instead, the Course says that we made the world. To be more precise, we dreamt the world as a manifestation of our insane belief in separation. This manifestation then serves as quote-unquote proof that separation is actually real. We made the world, in other words, to reinforce our separation from God. And the Course quote is, "Thus the world was meant to be a place where God could enter not, and where his son could be apart from him. We made the world as a means for demonstrating hell is real." And let's just pause there for a moment. So I think most of us here, I'm guessing at this point, have had enough familiarity with the Course in Miracles to be very familiar with these teachings that actually sound quite different than traditional Christianity and other religions that believe that God created the world for us, that God created it, not that we created it. And the Course in Miracles, in these quotes that were just referenced, are speaking to the fact that God did not create the world, because anything that God creates is eternal. And clearly, this is not an eternal world. Nothing here lasts forever. Therefore, God could not have created it. We made the world, and as it says in this latter paragraph that we just read, to be more precise, we dreamt the world as a manifestation of our insane belief in separation. So the Course is saying that we are dreaming this dream as a result of our belief in separation. The belief in separation came first. This seeming dream of a world then followed. And this dream, therefore, serves to reinforce the fact that the separation must be real. This we must be bodies. We must not be of God if this is, if this is all real. So all those hooks and triggers, all the ego triggers, all the fears, sickness in all forms, lack in all its forms, conflict in all its forms, all of it is serving for the part of our mind that wants this, the part of our mind that wants to be separate. It's serving to be proof, quote unquote proof, that we've pulled off the separation, that we must be bodies. So as you all know, I'm sure you've heard me say this, we've talked about this before, I tend to see all this stuff that gets kicked up again, be it fears of any form, sickness, conflict, it's all witnesses for the ego, bait that the ego is dangling in front of each of us, hoping that we will take it and believe it. And of course, as we've also talked about too, we have to be where we are, and just trying to, mentally make ourselves not believe something is not the way out, but the way out is through, learning our lessons and through extending and expressing miracles, expressing love, as we learn that what we made is not actually who we are in terms of this world. So that's all I wanted to say for those beginning paragraphs. Before I keep reading, does anybody have anything you'd like to add or any questions? I feel like we got lots of hooks and triggers happening in the world as always, but 2020 has been loaded with them. All right, let's keep reading. In the first two chapters of the text, however, we find a view that sounds quite different. In this view, God created time. Excuse me, I'm not going to read the references in parentheses. In this view, God created time as a learning device, a classroom, so that we could learn our way out of the separation and return home to him. We do so by using time creatively and constructively, by giving miracles. To ensure this learning would take place, the atonement, this is a course quote, the atonement was built into the space-time belief. The atonement is characterized as the active ingredient in the learning device of the world. And this is another course quote, the world was a way of healing the separation, and the atonement is the guarantee that the device will ultimately do so. So just to pause here and say a couple things about this paragraph. Later on in the course, what this is presenting us in this cameo is that we're familiar with these teachings that God did not create the world. And that's very clear in terms of latter parts in the text and in the course. Yet earlier in the course, it talks about God creating time. And how atonement was built into the space-time belief. And this idea of God creating time sounds like it contradicts these later teachings that we created time. And so this whole cameo is about how to rectify those two teachings. So in this paragraph, it gets highlighted for us that to ensure our learning would take place, the atonement, the healing, undoing of fear was built into the fabric of the dream. So in other words, we could not get lost here forever and ever because the atonement has been built into our space-time belief. So the world, this is a course quote again, the world was a way of healing the separation and the atonement is the guarantee that the device will ultimately do so. So we made the world as a means of staying separate and yet repurposed. The world becomes a way of healing the separation by being where we are, by extending love and giving miracles and doing our work. Before I keep reading, any questions or comments?
Corinne?
Yes.
Corinne, did you say we created time or God created time?
Well, these are the two contradictory teachings. The course later on has a lot of references of us having made the world and time. But then there's also these, this one quote says God created time. So they sound contradictory. And that's what we're going to kind of rectify in this cameo. So it was made by us as part of the dream, you know, as the dream really, to hide out from God. But there's also this statement that God created time. So we're gonna look at how these two things actually come together.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tanya. Nice to hear your voice. Okay, so here we go. Yet is this view. So we left off with the world was a way of healing the separation and the atonement is the guarantee that the device will ultimately do so. Next paragraph. Yet is this view as different as it sounds? After all, the early chapters also contain a view which sounds very much like the later course. In the beginning, we were with God in heaven. There was no world. Then came the separation. We chose against our oneness with God and came to believe in separateness. As a result, we acquired the space-time belief. And this belief is really all that the world is. And then a course quote, ultimately, of course, space is as meaningless as time. The concept is really one of space-time belief. There is no actual world. Since only eternity is real, there is merely an illusion of time. We are meant to use this illusion for the sake of learning. And when our learning is complete, when we completely undo our erroneous space-time belief, we will reawaken to our oneness with God. At that point, the illusory world will be gone. All of this sounds exactly like what the rest of the course teaches. What's more, this material is found in the same passages as the problematic God created time material. In other words, the two strands, only eternity is real, and God created time, are completely interwoven. To even speak of them as two different strands is an artificial distinction introduced by us. And then we're going to read a passage as an example in just a moment. So again, just to emphasize here that it's saying that in the same passages, we hear these two threads of God creating time versus us having created the world. These two different ideas are interwoven together. So let's read this example. So this is from the Course. It says, ultimately, of course, space is as meaningless as time. The concept is really one of space-time belief. The physical world exists only because you can use it to correct your unbelief, which placed you in it originally. As long as you knew, you did not need anything. The whole device was unnecessary. Here in one passage, I'll just read this. Here in one passage, we have both sides. One side, space-time was put in place, the implication that it was put in place by God as a device that we could use to correct our unbelief. The other side, space-time is just a meaningless belief, which we were placed in by our unbelief. What we have then are two accounts of the origin of the world in the very same passage. One, God created it as a learning device for bringing us home. And two, we brought it about as a product of our decision to separate. I'm going to pause there. Now, I have to tell you a little funny side story. I'd read this cameo a long time ago, so I have underlining in it. And when I was reading it again, I think I started reading it yesterday, actually. I read it again, and I stopped at the same sentence that I underlined last time, being like, I don't think I agree with this. So in this sample paragraph from the Course that we just read, it says, ultimately, of course, space is as meaningless as time. The concept is really one of space-time belief. The physical world exists only because you can use it to correct your unbelief, which placed you in it originally. So Robert Perry in his commentary has taken that phrase, which placed you in it originally, and has interpreted that space-time was put into place by God as a device that we could use to correct our unbelief. Now I get where he's going. And I do agree that overall, there are these two threads in the Course, one in which we created the world and the Holy Spirit rewrote it in order for atonement to be in there. But I just have to tell you, this is personal to me. People, you don't have to agree with me. And clearly Robert Perry does not, but I don't read that sample paragraph that I just read and interpret that the world was put in place by God or that time was put in place by God, because it doesn't sit right with me to think that space-time was put in place by God, because that, I don't know, there's something about our will not being in that, like a loving father would not put us here. This is our choice to be here, because again, nothing is eternal here. And we just know all of the, you know, challenges of being in the world. So I don't interpret that paragraph. My bottom line is just that I don't interpret that paragraph to indicate, as Robert Perry does, that space-time is put into place by God. I just don't get that from that paragraph, but he feels that it does. So I just wanted to highlight that, because it is okay to disagree with other people's interpretations. But I do, again, want to emphasize these two sort of threads, which I do agree with, but the way that it makes sense to me is that we brought this world about through our belief in separation. And as that was happening, I guess, simultaneously, the Holy Spirit was rewriting it and writing in the atonement so we could repurpose the world. We could repurpose the world rather than a means for us to stay asleep. It could become a means for us to wake up. That I agree with 100%. So I just conceptualize that a little bit differently. I want to pause there because I just said a lot. So anybody want to chime in or have any questions or comments? Hi, Dave.
Corinne.
Hello.
Dave first, then Paul second. All right. Thanks, Paula. Hi, Dave.
Hi. It just seems to me that how could an eternal omniscient being create time? It just kind of a non sequitur for me.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right to me either. I, again, like I said already, it makes a lot of sense to me that the Holy Spirit would rewrite what we've done, but not that, you know, God would create it and put us in right. it. That's just, that doesn't, nothing about that resonates with me. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.
Paula.
This one line, in the beginning, we were with God in heaven. There was no world. So I kind of agree with what you're saying. We chose to be born, mm-hmm. to come into this world. Mm-hmm. That was a choice we made.
So that means that even
I don't know why I made that choice, but I guess I was curious.
I guess so. You know, we wanted to play this little game of specialness and see if we could find it here. But that's where, like, you know, when people say that babies are innocent and children come into this and are just a clean blank slate and they're totally innocent, we've already made that choice to come in. So even a baby, this is again pre-body. So before a soul decides to incarnate into a body, they've made a choice to want to come here. So we're not coming in and then learning fear. We've accepted fear into a part of our mind, which has then opened the door for this dreamy and yet seemingly terrifyingly real sick amusement park that we're in.
Okay.
Thanks, Paula.
Question.
I hear Cheryl, then Steve. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Okay. I'm with Paula. Oh my gosh, why the heck did I choose this? But but I have a question. I'm kind of backtracking from the beginning of what you were reading. Where, and I know you have your own personal experience with this, with the anxiety. Where does the terror of death come in? Because I mean, like, I'm sure it varies for each person, mm-hmm. and it probably varies depending on the person's health too. There's probably a lot of variables, but where does that terror of death come in if we like know that death, you know, leaving this body means to be back home, but yet why is it so terrifying?
Oh, isn't that such a great question? Thank you, Cheryl, for that question. Because I've said something about the fear of death. I can remember saying it to one of my my in-laws at one point. And they were like, oh, I'm not afraid to die. And I think my dad was like, oh yeah, I'm not afraid to die. And I'm just like, that's BS. Like we all carry this terror of death because it's really a fear. So I have a few thoughts. It's a fear of the loss of the body. And we might put that fear out there and, you know, we might project it in different ways or in different forms, but we're afraid of losing the body because we've identified it. We've identified with it as our home and as who we are. You know, we don't have an intellectual or experiential memory of like what happens after we are no longer identified with a body. But the terror of death, it's a weird thing because it's like the terror of it at the same time is like worshiping it. So it's this weird sort of like relationship where if we're afraid of it, it's because we believe it to be real. And so it's like this, like, oh my gosh, yes, it's real. We have to be careful and do X, Y, Z to avoid it and such. So it's this weird like worshiping of it while we feel like we are terrified of it. And when I say worshiping, that's just something that has helped me in my thinking about my own fears of death, because I can remember a very particular turning point for me when I was like, I don't want to worship the God of death anymore. Like literally that's what I'm doing by pumping so much of my life force into my anxieties and my fears. I'm worshiping this quote unquote lowercase g God of sickness. And I don't want to do that anymore. So we could say that the terror of death beneath that is really like a fear of God, because I don't know if I have words for this at this moment, but that's, if we look even deeper than a fear of death, it's a fear of capital L love. It's a fear of God. And it's a fear that we're going to be punished for what we think we did, what we haven't done. You know, we think we've pulled off the separation. We have not. We have not changed eternity. We have not changed God. And yet we're afraid that we're going to be punished for doing so. And so there's that fear of death there. I'm sorry, that fear of God there. And I believe that is what is underneath, you know, the terror of death. So that's a fascinating question that we can go down. And I'm wondering, Cheryl, do you have any thoughts more about that? Or,
you know what, you blew my mind with the worshiping part. I was like, oh yeah, totally can see that.
Yeah, yeah.
The more you fixate on it, the more mm-hmm. you feed that fear, the more you're making it bigger or whatever. I don't know, but you totally blew my mind. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm glad that was helpful. It's been a helpful thought for me too, working with my own fears of death. So thank you, Cheryl. That was really helpful. Steve, did you have your hand up before?
Yeah, but it's cool. It was just some straight thoughts that I was having.
Okay. Have they strayed on?
I don't know. We took up on this fear of death and I lost everything. So
No problem.
It wasn't a rabbit hole I jumped into. But
maybe it'll come back.
Well, I think, you know, going back to this thing with the atonement and stepping into separation and deciding that, you know, this is where we want to be. I don't know. Could it be that it's, you know, God created, you know, gave us, you know, self-will to manipulate but to maneuver through this, you know, this reality that we have here on earth. And that maybe the atonement or that, you know, time and space was injected into that equation too, just as one of the baselines that is required to be here. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Holy Spirit gave us the atonement as our escape valve. You know, it's like we can eject from here anytime as long as we go through the process of, you know, reaching, you know, awakening and going through what we have to do to actually accomplish the atonement and return to God within ourselves and just find that, you know, to be able to do that. And that's, I think that's part of this whole process. And we're going to keep coming back until we get it right.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Steve, I'm sorry. Did you want to finish?
Go ahead.
I just want to say, I love how you just called the atonement an escape valve. Because that's what it is. It's like the space-time belief, if you picture it, it's horizontal and it can just go on and on and get dragged out for as long as we want it to. But the escape valve, the atonement, is then suddenly a shift into the vertical. So it's a sudden shift into, and in the first 50 miracle principles, it says something about miracles are a sudden shift, like from time into timelessness, or it says something like that. And that's it. It's that little escape valve. And so it's almost like we could say that every time we experience a miracle or express a miracle, because remember, this is just what's been coming so much alive to me. It's been coming so alive to me in the past, however long it's been, few years, that those miracles are expressions of love. So each time we express love in some way, shape, or form, be it through a thought or through an act or through words, it's like we're getting little escape valves and little shifts out of time into timelessness. And that builds our trust. So our trust meter starts to increase, where we feel more and more ready to take bigger steps, you know, into that timelessness, into, you know, a little bit of a bigger escape valve. But then we retreat back into our fear again, because again, we love what we've made. We love these bodies. There's part of me that loves being Corinne and is afraid of that loss of, you know, that body identification. So it's about acknowledging that and being honest about it and owning it and bringing it to the Holy Spirit. But I just wanted to emphasize again, the piece that shifts us out of time and into eternity that I feel like, I know I ignored for a long time because my internal suffering was so bad that I needed to work in my mind as much as I could. But it's, again, it's the expressions of love and just how much of a big deal that is. How so many miracles can happen as a result of just expressing love. I'm seeing it all over with the Love Lens program. And it's just beautiful.
Corinne, could I?
Yes, hold that thought, Paula. I just want to make sure Steve's done. Steve, you're just going to say something.
These little spikes that you referred to, these, you know, where we get to go vertical, that was something that I learned early on when I was working the course. It was that we're driving along this timeline, you know, horizontally. Mm-hmm. When we get that vertical spike, those are those holy instances. Those are the miracles that you just described. Those, it's kind of like our ability to just kind of be part of the oneness just for that moment. And then we drop back into 3D and away we go and just keep working at it. So
yeah,
it's a wonderful place to be, a wonderful time to be.
Yeah, it is.
To know this and to be able to try, let it live, you know, flow through into our lives. So
yes.
Very grateful to be here. So thank you. Keep doing.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Thank you. Paula.
What Steve was just talking about, the spikes. Can I just read one little paragraph? Because as far as I'm concerned, that spike is related to faith.
Mm.
The power set in you, in whom the Holy Spirit's goal has been established, is so far beyond your little conception of the infinite that you have no idea how great the strength that goes with you. And you can use this in perfect safety, yet for all its might, so great it reaches past the stars and into the universe that lies beyond them. Your little faithlessness can make it useless. If you would use the faithlessness instead. So when we hold to faith in any situation that feels like it's bringing us down, and I've had a few lately, the miracles that happen, and you know, you don't even have to even try to imagine how, what, where, when, why. It's just, my daughter lost her job, right? And now I simply go to faith, period. I have faith. And that's it. I have faith. What happens? Her job was just posted in the wanted ads, in the help wanted ads. And I don't know how that's going to turn out, but once again, I have faith.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
The best possible outcome will occur because I have faith, because I have the power of the universe behind me. I'm sorry, that just to me is exactly what Steve was talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what this whole cameo is about too, that we created time, and what would the ego have done but set up, you know, little different obstacle courses along this space-time continuum to convince us and to keep us in fear. That's the job of the ego. The Holy Spirit's rewrite of time. I conceptualize this as two scripts. But the Holy Spirit's rewrite, or the Holy Spirit script, is what we hold to when we're saying, I'm staying in trust. I am staying in faith. I'm not going to, I might be having a fearful episode and be freaking out right now, but I'm willing to come back to faith. I'm willing to come back to trust. And every time we have one of those spikes into the vertical, you know, a sudden shift into timelessness, again, those are like little building blocks that are building up our foundation to be able to get stronger and more convicted in our trust and in our faith. And just one more thing to add, like it's just so beautiful. I'm thinking, I know I shared this with you all when it happened over the summer, and it was another time it happened probably in the fall, where, you know, we're abiding by the recommendations in terms of COVID and all of those, you know, things that you're supposed to do and not to do. And I shared with you all when this happened that my husband, it's like, I'm being careful. Then of course I walk up to him when he's at work and he's got his former supervisor on the quad, you know, on the beach. This is over the summer, and she's not wearing a mask and she's talking, saying, "Hi, Corinne," like all over the back of my husband's head. And I'm like, "What are you doing? This is," and the little instances like that where I was feeling like he was not being careful. The ego trick is that I should get mad at him because he's not doing something right, because we have to defend against something to stay safe. That's what the ego has set up. Repurposed, if I'm never upset for the reason I think, and I'm tempted to blame him for not being careful, again, ego trap, what is this doing? But reminding me that I could be like, all right, you know, nobody's can be mindful, I guess, 100% of the time. And I have to come back to trust. That's ultimately what I have to do is he's playing a role to help me look at my fear and bring that up to the surface so I can come back to a place of being like, you know what, Jesus, I'm putting both my hands into your hands and I'm holding on to you. So that's what, Paula, you were just talking about just having that faith. That's it. That is it. So thank you. Thank you, everybody. Did I hear somebody on the phone who wanted to chime in? I heard a button.
Hi, Corinne. That was me.
Hi, Tanya.
Hi. You just spoke to what I was going to ask you about because I've had a really hard day. And sometimes when I hear, and I'm not, I hope this doesn't sound offensive, but when I hear things like, if I just do this, I feel like, okay, so I'm not able to do that right now. So I guess that can just give me one more thing to feel badly about. But when you were talking earlier about miracles, and I was going to ask you, is it sometimes enough of a miracle to just apologize for acting out on these feelings and to just acknowledge I'm in a really bad place and this is the best I can do today. And you know what I mean?
I
think you just spoke to that.
Oh, I'm giving you the biggest hug. And I first want to acknowledge what you just said, that those statements of like, if I just do this, you know, then it's easy. If I just have faith or if I just trust, then it's easy. And that can be just another means for beating ourselves up that we're not doing that, you know? And so thank you for saying that, because I do want to emphasize too, that whenever any of us share, it's always so important that we're just speaking, you know, from our own experience and honoring the fact that we've all got, you know, different situations that we're in. So thank you for just, number one, acknowledging that. And number two, really seeing and giving voice to, because you're not the only person feeling this, that when we hear that it's like easy for somebody like to just trust, that it can make us feel bad because we're having a hard time. And that's again, let's see that for what it is without any guilt, without any judgment. It's just the ego trying to, you know, just stay in control and stay, keep its grip. So the way that we undo that is just by naming it, being transparent about it, owning it, not feeling guilty about it and saying, Holy Spirit, help. So that's the first thing that I wanted to say. I really appreciate you giving voice to that, because I know that you're not the only one who has felt that. And then it is absolutely enough of a miracle to apologize, to say, to say what you just said, to acknowledge where we are, that if we're in a really difficult place and we're doing the best that we can. I do that all the time with my husband, all the time. I'll say, this is my ego having a little conniption right now, and I am sorry. And I know that, you know, I'm gonna ask you to just hold this space for me, you know, as I move through this. And that is absolutely enough of a miracle. That is an expression of love. It's an expression of love, not only to the other person to just like articulate that, but it's an expression of love to yourself. Because again, the ego can't exist in transparency. Ego and fear can only exist when it's hidden. So as we get more and more transparent about it, we're literally not giving the ego anything to stand on. So that transparency is a beautiful thing. And that's why I just appreciate so much, Tanya, that you shared that. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I've done some good stuff today, even though it's so just bad. Felt like a hell day. Then I've done some good stuff. Thank you.
You sure have. You sure have. And you're doing it for all of us. And we are all in this together. So thank you. It was really, really helpful. Oh, and I don't think that you can see this, but you're getting love in the chat. Oh, thank you. Anyone else before we keep reading? It's funny. I thought we'd like fly through this cameo and have all this time, and we only have 20 minutes left. So this has been such helpful conversation, and I so appreciate everybody sharing. Dave.
I just wanted to say that it's not our job to give things to the Holy Spirit perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
We you know, we may lack faith. We may lack sincerity. We may, you know, all of those things. But the best we can do is good enough. Mm-hmm. And that's all the Holy Spirit needs.
Dave, you speak truth. It feels like a breath of fresh air. So thank you for saying that. You are absolutely spot on that it is not our job to give anything to the Holy Spirit perfectly. You're reminding me, where is it? Oh, it's over here. I've shared this quote before. Let me get it. It's going to take me 1 second. It's this quote.
He needs only your willingness, that one.
Yes. he needs only your will. So I won't read the whole thing, but I am going to read the whole thing. The Holy Spirit asks only this little help of you. Whenever your thoughts wander to a special relationship, which still attracts you, and remember, a special relationship can be our relationship to our bodies. It can be our relationship, it can be our relationship to fear, whatever that still attracts us, enter with him into a holy instant and there let him release you. He needs only your willingness to share his perspective, to give it to you completely. Here's the line. And your willingness need not be complete because his is perfect. It is his task to atone for your unwillingness by his perfect faith. And it is his faith you share with him there. And then here's the other line that's so good. Out of your recognition of your unwillingness for your release, his perfect willingness is given you. So we don't even need to have perfect willingness. We don't need to have anything perfect at all. It's just literally like a smidgen that we need. And it's the Holy Spirit's job to exchange that for her perfect willingness. For those of you who have been tuning into the Love Lens, freedom has really rubbed off on me with tuning into the Holy Spirit as more of the female energy. And I really like referring to the Holy Spirit now as she. So thank you for that, Dave. That was just, we needed to hear that. Hi, Nikki.
Can I have a question? So in practicing, like I always ask you for prayers and guidance, practical things. So in practicing like the prayers today, I was like, you know, help me to see these people with forgiveness, help me to do this. And then going with what was just spoken about with just having the willingness and then adding on to what Paula was saying with having the patience, maybe I need another prayer for patience because I'm like, okay, I've been really willing all day. I'm really trying. do you have any,
anything that you're saying for willingness, just substitute patience because it's like right there in the same category. It's all the same thing. Holy Spirit, help me be patient, you know, be with me as I'm trying to be patient. I don't know how to be patient. I'm completely antsy and, you know, ready for this to be over. Help me be patient. There's actually a section you might want to read in the Manual for Teachers. It's the characteristics of God's teachers. It's in the very front. It's actually the fourth section in the manual. Is patience here? Patience. It's part 8. In this CE edition, it's page 1584 in the Manual for Teachers. And it's a little paragraph on patience. You might want to check that out.
I will look that. And it's funny because I was thinking how all the last four or five speakers, everything tied in together, including Tanya. And I was like feeling that myself today. But then it sort of circles back to how we started the call, which is, why the hell did I choose to be here today? Like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. So that's it. And a shout out of solidarity to my girl, Tanya.
Yes, okay. I feel that too. Thank you, Nikki.
I'm grateful for this call. This helps. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you. Let's actually go ahead and keep reading. So I marked down, I think we're on the top of page 1762, the first full paragraph. Actually noting these two accounts, I think is where we're starting. All right, actually noting these two accounts. So our two accounts, just to quickly review, God created the world as a learning device for bringing us home versus us bringing the world about as a product of our decision to separate. So it says, actually noting these two accounts makes it possible to harmonize this early teaching with the later teaching of the course. We already know that the later course includes a version of the second account, that we made the world as a result of the separation. Yet, perhaps surprisingly, it also includes a version of the first account, that the world was made by the divine as a means for getting us home. To understand this, we first need to realize that the statement, God created time, isn't as problematic as it sounds at first. At this point in the dictation, the Holy Spirit is not really part of the picture. He is only mentioned six times in the first four chapters of the course, and has not been mentioned at all when God created time is said. As a result, actions the later course attributes to the Holy Spirit are actions the early course attributes to God. For instance, in the opening paragraphs of the course, Jesus originally said, God will direct you very specifically. The editors of the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, however, changed this to reflect the language of the later course. So they edited it to, his voice, the Holy Spirit, will direct you very specifically. Also, at this early stage of the text, the word create is used in a more loose, conventional way than it is later on. In chapter 3, it becomes a technical term that refers only to creation in heaven. But in chapters 1 and 2, it refers to producing something either in heaven or on earth. For these reasons, the statement, God created time, could mean, in later course parlance, that the Holy Spirit made time. This change in language is key because there are allusions to this very idea in the later course, as we will now see. In chapter 25 of the text, we are told that this world has two who made it. To each, it has a different purpose, and to each, it is a perfect means to serve the goal for which it is perceived. Doesn't this two makers idea sound like what we just saw from the early dictation? Another section tells us that the Holy Spirit could inject a hidden spark of beauty into the world that the Son of God made in insanity. And when we see the spark of beauty, the smallest leaf becomes a thing of wonder and a blade of grass a sign of God's perfection. This, of course, sounds much like the Holy Spirit building the atonement into the world. There are even two passages that clearly say that time was made by the Holy Spirit. Workbook lesson 193 urges us to spend more time doing our daily practice and says time was made for this. Time was made for us to do our workbook practice. Doesn't that sound similar to God created time so that man could use it creatively? And that's from chapter one. Lesson 138. Heaven is the decision I must make, provides an even fuller picture. So we begin today considering the choice, this is the quote. So we begin today considering the choice that time was made to help us make, the choice for heaven. Such is its holy purpose, now transformed from the intent you gave it, that it be a means for demonstrating hell is real. So we made time as proof that hell is real. And then the Holy Spirit remade time, giving it a new and holy purpose. In his remaking, it became solely a means for us to make the choice for heaven. Here then is another instance of the two makers teaching. Thus, in addition to telling us that this world has two who made it, The later course tells us repeatedly that time was made by the Holy Spirit for a holy purpose. These passages are direct links to the early statements that time and matter were created for a holy purpose. This allows us to put forth a single view that encompasses both the early and the later teaching on who made the world. And I just want to pause here for a moment. We only have a few paragraphs to go, but I just read a lot. So let's just pause for a second here. So what we just read was this idea. So it explained just how in early course versus later course, the language changed, where the Holy Spirit is introduced not immediately. It had used God initially, then the wording gets changed to the Holy Spirit. The difference between the words create and make are used more loosely in the beginning of the course versus later on. It becomes clear in the course that creation is only something that happens at the formless level, creating. Making is what we do here in the world. So we could say, instead of God created time, the Holy Spirit made time. For me, what sums everything up, all these different references for like time was made for this, God created time so man can use it creatively, it's summed up for me in the sentence. It's like on page 1763, it's the second full paragraph. It basically says, we made time as proof that hell is real, and then the Holy Spirit remade time, giving it a new and holy purpose. And every time now, so let's go back for a moment to our earlier, when we were talking about those spikes into the vertical. So we're going along the horizontal and we shift into the vertical for a moment. You can think of that as, I like to think of that as collapsing of the ego timeline. It's collapsing this space-time continuum. And in a sense, you are stepping now into the like the parallel, which is the Holy Spirit's version. I conceptualize this as two different scripts. The ego wrote the script of separation. Every time we choose a miracle and repurpose everything here, we are shifting scripts. It's like we're shifting pathways from the ego timeline over to the Holy Spirit's timeline, which is collapsing the ego's timeline. And that's where we're learning our joyous lessons. So that's how I think about it. But I really like this, that we made time as proof that hell is real, and then the Holy Spirit remade it. So it's our choice to choose for the Holy Spirit and to have the Holy Spirit's purpose be the focus in any situation rather than the ego's focus in any situation, which is, you know, going to be some interpretation of fear. Any comments or questions before we read the last few paragraphs? Hi, John.
Hi. I was just, you know, this is all reminding me of a lot of things that have been coming up. I'm in chapter 31 of the text, doing the text lessons, and almost done. And the day before yesterday, Robert's suggested practice thing was, no matter what I think, the truth in me remains as radiant as a star, as pure as light, as innocent as love itself. And it just, you know, it helps me see things from a different perspective. And same with time. It's like, yeah, this isn't real. It's just all an illusion. So I just wanted to put that in there.
Thank you, John. It's so helpful to just hear that and just remember that despite anything we think we've done, we have not changed the truth. We have not changed God. We have not changed eternity. We have not changed the truth about ourselves. And what you just said was just beautifully speaking to that, that we remain, what was it, as radiant as a star?
Can we just say that one more time?
Could you, John?
Yeah, it says no matter, oops, darn it. Hang on a second. No matter what I think, the truth in me remains as radiant as a star, as pure as light, as innocent as love itself. And then the response to temptation too was, I choose to see you as spirit, and then put in the person's name, not as a body. Because it was about seeing the flesh, which I thought was really strange, and looking at the flesh and the spirit, realizing the flesh isn't real. Whatever we see in the flesh is an illusion, and only the spirit is real.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you, John. That was beautiful. Oh, gorgeous. All right, let's finish out this cameo. God created us as spirit in a purely spiritual heaven in which we enjoy direct and unlimited communication with him. There was no physical world nor any need for such a world. However, we chose separation from God. Out of this belief in separation, we dreamt a world of time and space. This world is only an illusion, yet it seems real to us, and it therefore offers apparent proof that separation is real. The world then is there to reinforce our belief in separation, as well as our belief in sin, attack, and death. However, in between our original choice to separate and the emergence of the physical world, the Holy Spirit was able to enter in and influence the process. What we made for our purpose, the Holy Spirit remade for his, for hers. As a result, the world that actually showed up had the atonement built into its very fabric. The world became a classroom in which we could learn our way out of the separation. In this world, the atonement is always operating, moving us forward in our learning toward the end of learning, when we will awaken again in heaven and the world will be no more. The early and later course converge on the same picture, even though they clearly differ in emphasis. The later course emphasizes that the world was a product of our choice to separate. The early course emphasizes that the world was made by the divine as a learning device for bringing us home. Yet both sides are present throughout the course, and therefore each side should be respected as serving an important teaching purpose in A Course in Miracles. So I just want to emphasize from these final few paragraphs, at the very top of page 1764, this top sentence, as a result, the world that actually showed up, so this world that we seem to be in right now, has the atonement built into its very fabric. That's really good news. So again, whatever we think we've done, whatever, we've not changed a thing. We have not changed eternity. We have not changed our true nature. We have not changed God. None of that has occurred. And this seeming classroom that we seem to be walking around in, it has the atonement built into its very fabric. So we can try to avoid, you know, our lessons. We can try to avoid spiritual growth, but we can't. Our learning is guaranteed because the atonement is built into its very fabric. Our success is guaranteed because the atonement is built into the very fabric of this dream. So how beautiful is that? That is a call for joy, trust, happiness, that as difficult as things may seem right now in form, this is saying that the undoing of fear, the atonement has been built into its very fabric. So there is help along the way, and it's here. It is here. And that's very reassuring to me. Cheryl, yay! I'm with Cheryl. I'm saying yay also.
Can I just say woohoo?
Woohoo! Yes, 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 yes. Thank you for that. It's cause for celebration for sure. Oh, any other comments or questions before we go?
I have a question.
Yes.
Where can I find what you read about willingness?
Okay. So, great question. I have written down here, I have like a photocopy of it, but it's from the text. So I'm assuming you don't have that version. Do you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition by any chance? The blue book purple one? Okay. Does anybody have the reference for the CE handy? Because I know that I shared that quote not too long ago. If you email me, Stephanie, I will get it to you.
Okay.
I need to write the reference on my piece of paper. I only have the FIP written down. So yeah, if you email me, I'll find it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Well, as always, thank you so much for being here. And just from the bottom of my heart, thank you, because we're all helping each other. And every time any one of us has that moment of shifting from the horizontal into the vertical, that is affecting all of us. It's helping all of us. Maybe, you know, we'll have no idea on either the giving or the receiving end, but any work that you do is for each one of us. So thank you for just for being here. Mm-hmm. I love you all. Have a great week.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.
See
everyone.
You next year.
Good night.
Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Bye, Carla. I always say hi and bye at the very end.
I know, right?
It's good to see you. Love you all.